The House will come to order and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Roan, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dollum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilman, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Menace, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker.
Here. Judd Calvin. Thank you. The Honorary Sergeant-at-Arms and House Sergeant-at-Arms will admit the members of the Senate and staff. Okay. The Honorary Sergeant-at-Arms and Sergeant-at-Arms of the House will escort the President of the Senate to the rostrum.
The Sergeant of Arms of the Senate will seat the Senate members. The 74th Legislative Assembly of Oregon, meeting in joint session, welcomes you to the inauguration of Oregon's 36th Governor, the Honorable Theodore R. Kolongoski. The Secretary of the Senate will call the roll of the Senate.
Sit down. I can't get that. Turn out of it. Atkinson.
Here.
Avakian.
Here.
Bates. Bates. Beyer,
here.
Brown,
here.
Burdick,
here.
Carter,
here.
Deckard,
here.
Devlin,
here.
Barioli,
here.
George G,
here.
George L,
here.
Gordley,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Cruz,
here.
Metzger,
here.
Monis Anderson,
here.
Monroe,
here.
Morissette,
here.
Morris,
here.
Nelson,
here.
Brzozinski,
here.
Schrader, Starr, Berger, Walker, Westlin, Whitsitt, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here.
29 members present.
The Chief Clerk of the House will call the roll of the House.
Barker.
Here.
Barnhart.
Here.
Berger. Beyer. Bonamici.
Here.
Boone. Boquist.
Here.
Broun. Buckley. Burley.
Here.
Butler.
Here.
Cameron.
Here.
Cannon.
Here.
Clem.
Here.
Cowan.
Here.
Dollum.
Here.
Dingfelder. Chris Edwards.
Here.
David Edwards.
Here.
Esquivel.
Here.
Flores. Galizio. Gerard. Gelzer. Gelzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Menace. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnett. Witt. Mr. Speaker. All members answering. Greenlick excused.
Mr. Speaker, distinguished guests and members of the Joint Assembly, if there is no objections, committees to escort our former governors, state elected officials, judges of the Court of Appeals and the Tax Court, justices of the Supreme Court, and Governor Kulongoski will be named by the chair without the formality of motions. If there being no objection, it is so ordered. Senators Brown, Berger, Representative Rosenbaum, and Nolan will serve as a committee to escort the Honorable Barbara Roberts, former governor of this state, within the bar of the House. Representatives Dingfelder and Morgan and Senators Devlin and Ferrioli will serve as a committee to escort the state elected officials within the bar of this House. Senators Avakian and Beyer, Representatives Barker and Wissanen will serve as a committee to escort the Chief Judge and the judges of the Court of Appeals and the Tax Court Judge within the bar of this House. Representatives McPherson and Krieger and Senators Burdick and Nelson will serve as a committee to escort the Chief Justice and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court within the bar of this House. Mr. Ryan Gale, serving as an honorary escort, and Senators Johnson and Morris and Representatives Hunt and Minnis will serve as a committee to escort the Honorable Theodore Kulongoski, Governor of Oregon, within the bar of the House. Please remain seated until the distinguished guests have arrived. And the chair recognizes Senator Brown.
Mr. President, I'm pleased to present the Honorable Barbara Roberts, former governor of
You will escort the honored guest to the section reserved for her. The chair recognizes Representative Dingfelder. Also, the Honorable Randall Edwards, the State Treasurer, Hardy Myers, the Attorney General, Dan Gardner, the Labor Commissioner, and Susan Castillo, the Superintendent of Public Instruction, will please also go to the reserved seats for you. Please, statewide elected officials, one and all, one and all. Excuse me, Senator Vakian, let me recognize you. The chair recognizes Senator Brad Avakian. You will escort the chief judge, the associate judges, and the tax court judge to the rostrum, please. Excuse me. I want to give you the respect you deserve. And the chair recognizes Representative McPherson. You will escort the Chief Justice and the Associate Justices to the rostrum, please. The chair recognizes Senator Betsy Johnson. You will escort the governor to the rostrum. If I could, please, let me direct your attention to the South Gallery. Our fellows of South Salem High School, directed by Carol Stinson, will sing God Bless America. thank you, our fellows from the South Salem High School. Well done. The Oregon State Police Honor Guard will post the colors, and the national anthem will be sung by Captain Ramona Treat, the Oregon National Guard. The invocation will be given by Father Jim Clifford, the Order of St. Augustine, Providence Medford Medical Center.
Among many of the world's great religions like Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, the Hebrew Bible is recognized as sacred, and so it is from this that I read, remembering the time when Solomon was made king of Israel. In the second book of Chronicles, we read, "That night God appeared to Solomon and said, 'Ask what you would like me to give you.' Solomon replied to God, 'You showed me great kindness to David, my father, and you have made me king in succession to him. Therefore, now give me wisdom, and knowledge to act as leader of this people. For who could govern a people so great as yours? Since that is what you want, God said to Solomon, since you have asked not for riches, treasure, honor, the lives of your enemies, or even for a long life, but for wisdom and knowledge to govern my people, of whom I have made you king. Therefore, wisdom and knowledge are granted you. So I pray, God of all providence, we call upon you as we gather this morning for the inauguration of Governor Kulongoski. You have bestowed upon him gifts and talents, and you have given him a desire to use these for the good of others. As Solomon sought wisdom in the governing of his people, so now Governor Kulongoski seeks this same wisdom. He seeks this not for himself, but for the benefit of those to whom he has been given the opportunity to serve in the state of Oregon. We not only ask your blessing upon the governor, we also ask your blessing upon all those who have the responsibility to work with him in service to their brothers and sisters in the state of Oregon. May these people in government service have the same wisdom and strength to use all you have given them for the well-being of their fellow citizens of our state. For indeed, this is a wonderful and awesome opportunity for the governor and those in service, the opportunity to use your gifts, O God, to make this state a better place for all people. This is an opportunity to lead by word and example, to lead into a future that has promise and hope for all people, to lead the great state of Oregon not into the spotlight of the nation, but into the spotlight of justice and right, to lead us to a place where all people enjoy the same rights, no matter what their ethnic background, their economic situation, their educational achievement, their sexual orientation, or their physical or mental ability or disability, to lead us to a place where children can grow and learn without restriction or limitation, to lead us to a place where all may have the care they need, not to have to face decisions whether to eat or to have their medical needs met, to lead us to a place where people value the ability to listen, not only to people who agree with them, but also to those who disagree, to lead us to a place where people devote their energies to getting along and working together, to lead us to a place where we see the precious gift of being a state, a community, a people that cares for one another and works for the good of all. Yes, gracious God, we call upon you, as did Solomon, to give to our governor and his fellow civil servants the knowledge, the wisdom, and the empowerment to lead us to this place. As we gather this morning, God, we ask you also to watch over the men and women who serve our country, especially those from Oregon who are overseas and in harm's way. We pray that you keep them safe and bring them home soon to their families and friends. And so, God of all, we ask you to bestow your abundant blessing upon Governor Kulongoski as he begins this second term, upon those whom he serves, and indeed upon us all, that we all may do good, work for peace, and make this state, this country, and this world a better place because we have lived in it. Amen.
On behalf of the Joint Assembly, I would like to thank the following participants: Parker Fellows from South Salem High School, the Oregon State Police Honor, State Police, the Honor Guard for presentation of the colors, Captain Ramona Treat, Oregon National Guard for singing the national anthem. Also, like to recognize and thank those who are serving as ushers in attendance today, the Oregon National Guard and staff from the Legislative Assembly, honored guests and dignitaries, the governor's family. On behalf of the entire assembly, I would like to welcome the governor's family, some coming from Missouri, Washington, Connecticut, Massachusetts, California, Kentucky, the Volunteers, Tennessee, and of course, mighty Oregon. I would like to also recognize the former Senate presidents and speakers. Please stand when your name is called. This is the former speakers and presidents of the House and Senate. The Honorable Ed Fadley, Bill Bradbury, Brady Adams, Gene Durfler. Now to the speakers. They were presidents. Robert Duncan, Phil Lang, Hardy Myers, Vera Katz, Larry Campbell, Lynn Lundquist. Please acknowledge these individuals, please. Special music by the Atkinson Elementary Choir from Portland, directed by Johannes Murphy. The song will be Child of the World. Please. Thank you. Governor Kulongoski, members of the judiciary, statewide elected officials, honored guests, friends and family and citizens, members of the media, and Mr. Speaker, and all members of the House of Representatives, the members of the State Senate consider it a high honor to be invited here today by you to share in this special moment. It is our honor and privilege to be with you and to join with you. The day is special because, like no other day in Oregon's year or every other year, did all three branches of state government come together at one place at one time, and may I say, at least for a brief period of time, get along so well. It highlights for all of Oregon how we govern ourselves. Three very separate and distinctive branches, but very dependent on each other. A few examples. As we meet here today, there are 201 cases on the dockets of the appellate courts. And even though the statistics are still coming in as recently this morning, last year when they were finally compiled, we believe there were at least 135 cases pending in the trial courts. That's a lot of pending. And those decisions that they're working on have come from many of the laws, if not all the laws, passed by you, signed into law by this governor, but by past legislatures and other governors. You know, there's also something else that the perhaps judiciary relies on the legislature for. It could be the best way to be trained to be a good judge. At least the honorable, the venerable, retiring Chief Justice Wally P. Carson thinks so. He said it was his legislative experience that best prepared him to be a judge. He said you have to be impartial. He said a good committee chairperson treats people politely, fairly, and plays by the rules and advances an agenda. In turn, the legislature and the governor often wait for the courts to tell us what we meant when we passed the bill, or what we didn't mean, and what to do next, or what an initiative does or does not do. We need you. As of today, the legislature is awaiting 2,120 bill drafts. That's just as of today, to discuss and debate and possibly pass on to the governor for possible approval and codification. And as of the day, this governor has submitted to the legislature a two-year budget and 627 agency bills for evaluation, discussion, and possible agreement. Let's face it. We need each other. We depend on each other. We can't exist without each other. We're in this together. When I began, I talked about how we are separate but dependent. But I left out a word, my fellow legislators, that is often described, used to describe our relationships. The word is equal. I believe the judiciary and the executive branch are equal, co-equal. They are fulfilling their jobs according to the Constitution. But I also believe the legislature no longer is. Hopefully, in a short period of time, the House and the Senate will pass a resolution. It will be a historic vote because it will direct Oregon's first annual session, and it will be attempted, hopefully, by this legislature to show how it works and to prove it can work. You know, it's interesting. Perhaps we're a little bit like that first wagon train on the Oregon Trail. I referred to that recently in the Senate just moments ago, but this is a little different situation. Back in 1841, when the first wagon train was to leave Kansas City, the organizer of the party was a guy named John Bidwell. He was 22 years old. And he wrote, "Our ignorance of the route was complete. We were ready to start, but no one knew where to go." Bidwell's group decided to wait for another wagon train. that was led by an experienced mountain guide. And he continued, at first we were independent, thought we could not afford to wait. But when we found that no one knew which way to go, we sobered down and waited for them to come up. And it was well we did, for otherwise probably no one of us would have ever reached our destination. Bidwell did not come to Oregon, because that first wagon train with those guys stopped in a place called Soda Springs, Idaho. Bidwell went south to California. A small group of 30 came to Oregon. Without a guide, they were on their own. My fellow legislators, my fellow Oregonian, this House was 34 members in 1859. In 1872, it became 60. The Senate was 16 in 1859 and became 30 in 1872. Not since 1872 has a major change taken place in the structure of the Oregon legislature. The waiting is over. The team is in place. This generation of legislators will forge the trail, I believe, the annual session trail, and we will be the guides toward a better, a more open, a more accessible, a more equal partner with the judiciary and with the executive and the public. I will close, if you will permit me, by taking a word or two or phrase from that song that we will sing in just a few minutes. From Oregon, my fellow legislators, you will be the empire builders. My fellow legislators, you will be the fairest and the best. My fellow legislators, you will be the heroes. Oregon, my Oregon. Thank you. My distinct and high pleasure to introduce the Speaker of all the House of Representatives in Oregon, the Honorable Jeff Merkley. Mr. Speaker.
Governor, representatives, senators, judges, all public servants, past and present, but most of all, good citizens of the state of Oregon, it's my pleasure to stand before you here today on the first day of the 74th session of the Oregon Legislature. In 1966, when our country was going through some pretty serious political changes, coming to grips with social injustice and the need to make those injustices right, Robert Kennedy gave us some perspective. Speaking about the incredible opportunities that we have to build a better society, he said, "Our future may lie beyond our vision, but it is not completely beyond our control. It is the shaping impulse of America that neither fate nor nature nor the irresistible tides of history, but the work of our own hands, matched to reason and principle, that will determine our destiny." The idea that people can change, or that societies and cultures can change, is what drives citizens to become public servants. We believe that with hard work and good ideas, we will be able to shape a better society. If we left government and policy to fade or the irresistible tide of history, Oregon would be a very different place today. But instead, we have been blessed with an active and engaged public, an engaged public that often gets engaged through initiatives as well as voting, that says we need to have our lives improved through changes that we can make. And throughout our history, we have done our best and we have listened carefully to the hearts, passions, and ideas of our citizens. Well, now, we've been given that opportunity again, as we are every 2 years when the legislature convenes, and every fourth year when we elect and bring in a new governor. Now we've been given That moment, we start afresh, and we have some new ideas, and some old ideas, and some bold ideas. We come at them with a commitment to address the needs of all Oregonians. And to do it in such a way that makes the people across the state proud of the government they have elected. Governor, you have come out of your first term and your second election with a full head of steam, with a strong vision, strong set of ideas for where we need to go in the months ahead. And Senator Courtney, you have been doing more than thinking about policy. You have been thinking about this institution. And you have driven the plan to have a public commission. And that commission has brought ideas about how we can improve this institution, this legislature. And I feel privileged to be working with the 60 members of the House and the 30 members of the Senate and with Senator Courtney to make this legislature the best problem-solving legislature to be found in the United States. And I guarantee to you, Senator Courtney, that the House will immediately entertain the resolution that sets forth a significant change in how we do business in setting forth annual sessions, and that this will be the first order of bill to come to the floor of this House. We, colleagues, have been going through a period in this country and in this state where politics has become too much a bitter partisan battlefield. Friends and citizens, isn't it time to reclaim that polarized middle ground and rebuild an Oregon tradition of bipartisan collaboration? And together, I know that our Democratic leaders and our Republican leaders will work together to do exactly that. And along with the governor and our partners in the Senate, we will take on a positive agenda, one that will provide relief to the challenges that face Oregon families. At the end of the day, we're all aware that Oregonians want their kids' schools to be good places to learn, that they won't have to worry about their health care, and that they want their lawmakers to get the job done, melding together the best ideas from every corner of the state. 117,000 kids in Oregon who don't have health care. And that's 117,000 children whose parents go to bed at night hoping and praying the next day doesn't bring an illness or an accident. And that's not a Republican concern or a Democratic concern. That's a parent's concern. And children can't change their own situation. But we can. And we can take on having health care for every single child in this state. Rising prescription drug prices and the rising cost of health insurance creates enormous stress, and we can take that on. And in recent years, school districts have had to shut down core programs, were forced to shut down early because they didn't have the money to keep their doors open, and indeed, Oregon became the Doonesbury poster child for instability in our schools. And fully funding our schools and giving our kids a world-class education is not a Republican dream or a Democratic dream. It is a community dream. But though these problems are simple to identify, the solutions take hard work. They take cooperation. And cooperation takes trust. And I think that we're setting ourselves on the right path today. In fact, just a few hours from now, the House will consider two packages of rule changes that will dramatically change the culture of this institution. The first package, carefully worked on by the Republican caucus leader and the Democratic caucus leader and the Republican whip and the Democratic whip, is to set out ways that we can make this deliberation in this body such that every single House member has an appropriate voice and that every citizen gets time and every issue can be raised, and that therefore we can bring together the best possible collaboration. The second package is a package of gift rules. Now, these gift rule changes are not raised to criticize legislators. and they're not raised to criticize lobbyists who advocate forcefully and articulately for the needs of groups of citizens around the state and is a much-needed force in every representative democracy. No, these gift rules are brought together to strengthen the social contract with the citizens of this state and to say to them and to say to every Oregonian that we are here to do your work. I am incredibly grateful that earlier today Senator Hatfield was able to join us, and in his life and in his manner he set an example that sets that keynote for this session. And he wrote many years ago in a lesson he learned during his time in the Senate that the form in which political action is taken is often as important as the action itself. Well, as we take on these rule changes about gifts and about fair debate, we're recognizing that the path, as important as the product, in fact, the path and the manner will lead to a better product. We will reach good policy through honorable means for good people across the state. It is true, as Kennedy said, that the work of our own hands, matched to reason and principle, will determine our destiny. So let us start that work today, together. Thank you. We will now have special music from the Acafellas from South Salem High School, directed by Carol Stenson.
Come and let our swelling song mounds like the whirling wind. As it meets our singing throng, so blithe of heart and mind. Care and sorrow gone. Brothers in song, sing on. Brothers, sing on, sing on. Youth is a wandering troubadour, sailing the singing breeze, wooing a maid on a distant shore, over the tossing seas. Steering by the stars above, his vessel a song of love. Brother, sing on, sing on. Errant minstrels, thus we greet you, this to our voice is strong. With glad and open hearts we meet you in a festival of song. Care and sorrow now begun, brothers in song sing on. Brothers sing on, sing on.
Thank you so much for that beautiful song from the Acafellas from South Salem High School. Oregon's poet laureate Lawson Inada of Medford is a third-generation Japanese-American and only the fifth poet laureate of Oregon, and the first to be so honored since William Stafford served until his death in 1983. Mr. Inada won the American Book Award in 1994 and was named Oregon State Poet of the Year in 1991. He has received a number of poetry fellowships from the National Endowment of the Arts. He is an emeritus professor of writing at Southern Oregon University, where he has taught since 1966. Ladies and gentlemen, Lawson Inada, Oregon Poet Laureate, will now present a poem, Hope and Opportunity.
Thank you, sir.
Hope, as we all know, is at home in our hearts. We were born with hope, and it was nurtured in us. Opportunity, as we all know, must present itself to us. Opportunity can offer a chance for advancement. Today, our hope is evident. Today, opportunity beckons. Let all of us proceed as partners for the betterment of Oregon.
Thank you so much, Mr. Inada. I can't imagine a poem that was more appropriate to the moment than that. Thank you. As provided under Section 4, Article 5 of the Oregon Constitution, I, Jeff Merkley, Speaker of the House of Representatives, have hereby examined the voting returns from the last general election for the office of Governor of the State of Oregon and find that the Honorable Theodore R. Kulongowski has received the highest number of votes cast for the office and has been duly elected governor. I present the Honorable Theodore R. Kulongowski, Governor of the State of Oregon. The Honorable Paul J. DeMunis, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, will now administer the oath of office to the Honorable Theodore R. Kulongowski, Governor of the State of Oregon.
Governor, it's my great pleasure to administer the oath of office today. Would you please raise your right hand? Please repeat after me. I, Theodore R. Kulongowski, do solemnly swear.
I, Theodore R. Kulongowski, do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Oregon.
And the Constitution of the State of Oregon.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties of Governor of the State of Oregon.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties of Governor of the State of Oregon.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Governor.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Speaker Merkley, President Courtney, members of the 74th Legislative Assembly, my former colleagues on the Oregon Supreme Court, Governor Roberts, Father Jim, my fellow citizens, friends, I'm very, very honored to share this day with you. Before I say more, I want to say thank you. First, to the people of Oregon, and a special thank you to my wonderful wife, Mary, to my children, to my children, Ted, Kristen, and Justin, their mother, Lynn, and the most important blessing I received in 2006, my first grandchild, Peter. I also want to remember my mother-in-law, Elizabeth Oberst, and my father-in-law, Paul Oberst, who as lawyers in the 1960s helped bring the walls of discrimination tumbling down. My parents-in-law were a great inspiration. Their lives were a roadmap for me and countless others for how to live a life of integrity and moral courage. Today, I am inspired again by the thousands of Oregon soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines serving our state and nation in Iraq and Afghanistan. Over Thanksgiving, I visited these young Oregon heroes in both countries. Many of our troops gave me the telephone numbers of loved ones and asked me to call over the Christmas holidays with Christmas greetings from them to their families, which I was honored to do. I tell you, these brave young men and women are the best Oregon has to give. They have sacrificed in ways we can hardly imagine. But their place in history is not hard to imagine. Shakespeare gave us the words, "This story shall the good man teach his son. From this day to the ending of the world, we in it, we few, we happy few, we band of brothers." With that, I ask for a moment of silence in remembrance of the 77 Oregonians, including 15 from the Oregon National Guard, who have made the ultimate sacrifice in Iraq and Afghanistan, and to their courageous families. In his second inaugural, President Lincoln noted that there was little new he could say about the previous 4 years. His war-ravaged nation knew what it had been through. Our last 4 years have been difficult, but the people of Oregon know that. After all, it was their resilience, their hard work, and their deep faith that brought us back from the worst economic collapse since the Great Depression. So I'm not here to talk about what was. I'm here today to talk with you about what will be. This is a great moment of opportunity for Oregon. Our economy is strong, our confidence is renewed, our belief in the future is redeemed. I have another belief, that every citizen shares my vision for turning this great moment of opportunity into Oregon's longest and strongest period of prosperity. We have the opportunity to fully fund education from preschool through workforce while building a reserve that will shelter us from the storm of the next recession. We have the opportunity to see that every Oregon child has access to quality health care. We have the opportunity to protect our quality of life and preserve our reputation as a people who honor their national environment and natural environment. We have the opportunity to make Oregon a leader in an alternative and renewable energy. We have the opportunity to protect all of our citizens from all forms of discrimination. We have the opportunity to strengthen our cultural legacy. And we have the opportunity to make sure that when a fellow Oregonian, faced with a global economy that moves jobs around the world like pieces on a chessboard and demands more education and greater skills, asks, "Does anyone care about me? Who will give me a chance?" The answer comes back clear from each and every one of us. We will. The next 4 years is more than an opportunity to build on the gathering strength of Oregon's economy. It is an opportunity to remember why we love this place called Oregon and wouldn't live anywhere else. Oregon is the state that beckons each of us to search out and find where the sunrise begins and the river ends. Part nature, part spirit, part memory, part dream, and always asserting its independence and freedom to think differently. There is nothing wrong with setting limits, and there is everything right about making sustainability the fundamental test of our social, economic, and environmental policies. But we must never set limits on the spirit and conscience of Oregon, which is to always do better, see farther, think smarter, and imagine greater. Opportunity did not carry me across the finish line, but it did put me on the starting line. And that's all I ever wanted. My story is not so different from your story and the story of millions of other Oregonians. We weren't asking for a guarantee of success, just an opportunity to find success. So in this gray and rainy season, I tell you, the opportunity is the sunlight and water that will give every child in Oregon, from Ontario to Lincoln City, the chance to bloom. Opportunity transforms equity and fairness from moral words into social and economic action, and closes the gap, as we must, between those who have found the American dream and those whose faces are pressed against the window of that dream. Opportunity lifts Oregonians of every race and ethnic background onto the economic ladder, allowing them to learn a skill, find a family wage job, purchase a home, pay for health insurance, and save for college. An opportunity is a message to every Oregonian worried about what tomorrow will bring. These fellow citizens have done everything that was expected of them. They worked hard, paid their taxes, supported their schools, raised their children, and kept our economy on track. So to every Oregon family and every Oregon worker who feels insecure about the future, I make this promise. We will not abandon you. We have not stopped needing you. We will help retain you and see that you have the skills you need to compete in a global marketplace. And you ask, why should we pay so much attention to giving the gift of opportunity? Because opportunity is the Oregon way. We are not a place that tells our fellow citizens, you're on your own. We do care about each other and watch out for each other. Our neighborhoods and cultural traditions are sewn together into one quilt, not separated by walls and fences, or mountains and valleys. We do not move ahead by leaving others behind. We move ahead by tapping the skills, creativity, and potential of each and every one of us. That makes opportunity a two-way street. We invest in the individual, and that investment pays for itself many times over for all of Oregon. I said that we have reached a defining moment of opportunity for Oregon. But to seize that opportunity, we must stand united. Too often, we are defined by our differences, usually measured by our support or opposition to this ballot measure or to this social issue, or by where we live or our way of life. But defining ourselves by our differences can never move us forward. And opportunity is all about moving forward. I don't expect any of us to give up our core values. And as long as we are a state made up of diverse peoples from diverse places, contributing to the economy in diverse ways, we are going to have lively debates. But as sure as I'm standing here, there is only one way that we can take advantage of the opportunity that comes with a growing economy. We must work out our differences and our different points of view by working together. Before we are members of political parties, we are Oregonians. Before we are shop stewards or shop owners, we are Oregonians. Before we are electricians or engineers, preservationists or developers, producers or consumers, we are Oregonians. And before we choose to call any one town or region home, we choose to call Oregon home. So let us commit ourselves to a new birth of unity, and with that unity, a new birth of shared responsibility. Government has an important role to play in my vision of shared responsibility. For Oregonians who simply cannot take care of themselves, the only morally acceptable choice is for government to lend a helping hand. And government bears a very special responsibility to children. 4 years ago, I said that when times are tough, children go to the head of the line. Well, times are much better now, but that changes nothing. Children still must go to the front of the line. And that is why I am asking. And that is why I'm asking this Legislative Assembly to make Head Start available to every eligible 3- and 4-year-old in Oregon. We know how important it is to introduce children to reading at a very early age. But preschool is only the beginning. The time has come to make a real investment in children, starting with adequate and stable funding for every level of education, including our community colleges and universities. The same is true for health care. Every Oregon child up to age 19 needs, deserves, and must have health care coverage. On this issue, the age-old questions still apply. If not now, when? If not us, who? Ensuring all children is the beginning, not the end, of our health care coverage challenge. When no Oregonian goes to bed fearing the cost of their next visit to the doctor or hospital, then and only then will we have met our health care challenge. Now, if this sounds too difficult, I want to remind you what President Kennedy said.
We do not do things because they are easy. We do them because they are hard. Government's shared responsibility also includes being a partner with the private sector in combating global warming and making sure we attain energy independence and sustainable economic development in our state. Let me ask each and every one of you a question. How much do you think the war in Iraq is projected to cost? One Nobel Prize-winning economist put the figure at $2 trillion. I ask you to think for a moment about what we could have accomplished for America with a $2 trillion investment in education, healthcare, and an energy policy that put this nation on a path to energy independence. If you believe, as I do, that the Iraq war was at least partially motivated by America's addiction to oil, I have good news for you. There is a solution within our grasp. Reduce our demand on fossil fuels. That is the solution. I want Oregon State government to be a leader in the new movement away from fossil fuels. That means cutting our own energy consumption, shifting state energy use to renewable sources, and creating opportunities for green companies to grow and prosper here in our state. We can and will make Oregon the renewable energy capital of America. A generation ago, Oregon led the nation by preserving our coastline and beaches and by our stewardship of public land. Today, we must lead on global warming and the development of biofuels and other alternative energy sources. Past is prologue. Past is prologue on energy independence. Where Oregon goes, America will learn to follow. As for a sustainable economy, I'll say simply this. Put aside the legalisms and complexities for a moment and remember why we care about the environment in the first place. Protecting our open spaces, our forests, and our rivers and wetlands defines us as Oregonians. It is who we are. Sustainability is another opportunity. An opportunity to stay true to ourselves and to pass to future generations the same environmental treasure that our forebears, both native and pioneer, passed to us. As we start this new year, we must also ask, what is the business community's shared responsibility to make the most of this moment of opportunity for Oregon? I have traveled across this state calling for Oregon business leaders to be the strongest advocates for raising the corporate minimum tax and placing the corporate kicker in a reserve fund. Not because it's the right thing to do, although it is, not because it's the fair thing to do, although that is true too, but because it is the smart thing to do. No one has more riding on my commitment to fiscal stability and creating the best trained, best skilled, best educated workforce in the world than Oregon's business community. The public wants this change. The business community needs this change. And the time has come for the legislature to make this change. let me close by talking about the shared responsibility of citizens. Last month, Oregon experienced the trauma of two heartbreaking rescues that literally captured the world's attention. But it wasn't just the search that people were watching. It was the searchers. Heroic Oregonians, some in uniform, some not, put their own lives at risk to save strangers. Thousands more offered their prayers and support for their families. Our people know that we are each other's keepers and that we have a shared responsibility to look out for our neighbors, to teach tolerance, to be stewards of our environment, and to do, in President Lincoln's words, right as God gives us to see the right. As Oregonians, we have taken and passed this grace test of our character and humanity many times before. But with every new challenge to our moral courage and every old injustice not stricken from our laws or banished from our hearts, the test comes our way again. The test we face today is, can we see the right in a time of prosperity? Or will we be too blinded by the light of our good fortune to notice the many among us who are just one opportunity away from their own good fortune? I said that opportunity is the Oregon way. But will we only admire opportunity from a distance and remember it from the past? Or will we use the power of opportunity this year to raise hope, change lives, and build a more perfect future? This is our moment to decide. This is our children's moment to flourish. And by extending the hand of generosity, equality, and opportunity to all, this is the state of Oregon's moment to be reborn as America's state of grace. Thank you. God bless each and every one of you, and God bless Oregon.
Thank you so much, Governor, for that vision and that path. And we look forward to working with you, House and Senate, to go down that road and have a great adventure and a great conclusion in just 6 months from now. We now have the pleasure of having two songs. Please join Captain Ramona Treat from the Oregon National Guard, who will sing our state song, Oregon, My Oregon. And we will have a second song, and I believe that is coming from the Atkinson Elementary Choir. Okay.
You're all invited to join me to sing our state song. If you're able to stand, please stand with me, fellow Oregonians, as we celebrate our state song.
Land of the Empire Builder's Land. the golden west, conquered and held by free men, fairest and the best. Onward and upward ever, forward and on and on. Hail to thee, land of heroes, my Oregon. Land of the rose and sunshine, land of the summer's breeze. Laden with health and vigor, fresh from the western seas. Blessed by the blood of martyrs, land of the setting sun. Hail to thee, land of promise, my Oregon.
Now the Atkinson Elementary Choir of Portland will sing Amani Utupe. That was the most beautiful group of third grade singing I've ever heard here in the chamber, and I'd say that even if it wasn't my daughter up there singing with them. Everyone will please remain in the chamber until our distinguished guests have retired from the House chamber. Mr. Ryan Gale, honorary escort, and Senators Johnson and Morris, and Representatives Hunt and Minnis will escort Governor Kulongowski from the House. Please be seated. Representatives McPherson and Krieger and Senators Avakian and Nelson will escort the Chief Justice and Associate Justices from the Supreme Court from the House. Senators Avakian and Beyer and Representatives Barker and Wisnett will escort the Chief Judge and Associate Judges of the Court of Appeals from the House and the Tax Court Judge. Representatives Dinkfelder and Morgan and Senators Devlin and Ferrioli will escort the state elective officials from the House. Senators Brown and Verger and Representatives Rosenbaum and Nolan will escort Governor Roberts from the House chamber. I now declare the joint assembly adjourned. Members of the House and guests, please remain seated while the Honorary Sergeant at Arms and the Permanent House Sergeant at Arms escort the President and members of the Senate from the House chamber.
Okay. Be good. Thank you.
Are there any announcements? Yes. 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 No. Seeing no announcements, Representative Jensen, I will take a recess motion for 2:30 p.m. this afternoon. One more time, please, Representative Jensen. Oh, we don't have a microphone there at the moment. Technical difficulty, but we did hear you. Thank you. Representative Jensen moves the House into recess until 2:30 p.m., and without objection, the House will stand in recess.